Hey, Jill.
Hey.
Just you and me, huh?
Yeah. Oh, hello.
Hello.
I'm here as well.
This is Johan. How's everyone?
Good.
Doing well. And this is Rajesh.
Got part of the way to work and I realized I didn't have my wallet with me, so I raced back home.
There's a funny song Adam Sandler provided on his new Netflix special that can help you remember that.
Well, I never really, first time, but I don't know why.
It's called Phone Wallets Keys. It's a little jingle.
Okay. So anyone else on?
Hey, Ed. Hi, it's Tom.
Hey, Tom.
Hello.
You get hit with all the cold weather?
Yeah, for a day or two. We made it through it.
All right.
So let's get rid of the camera. Don't show the FaceTime camera. No video. Thank you. I don't know. I want to skip.
All right. Jennifer, you there? Johan? Kazoo? Mike Suddy? Sarah Joe?
I'm here.
Hey.
Hey.
Oh,
don't start that, man. It's like, I know it's only Wednesday, but it's like, holy crap. And
like,
a short week at that.
Like that week. Oh, I sent my letter on, all right?
Oh, good. Okay. All right.
Hi, Ed. Kathy Mitchell's on the call.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
Good.
Everything going well?
Hanging in there.
I heard somebody else got on.
Hannigan's here.
John Hannigan. How was your weather?
Oh, it was a nice walk on Sunday morning outside. It was 23 degrees below.
Below?
Wow.
Nice and sunny. Breezy.
I was watching pictures of Albany, New York, and
yeah,
did not regret my move at all.
Well, it's a lot warmer today.
It's Joanne here.
Joanne, how are you?
Good. How are you, Ed?
Good.
Michael, hi. How are you all?
Hi, Michael. Hey, Joanne, get me some stuff.
I'll send it today.
Oh, right, because I'm running on full speed on some of these things.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, thank you.
You're welcome, you're welcome. All right, Jennifer.
Yep.
Christy Petrenko.
Here.
You're there.
I'm here.
All right.
I'm here.
Cristiano.
Hi, yes, I'm here.
Claire Coles.
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, Claire, can
yes.
I call you after this is over?
Yes, you may, but yes.
What number?
404-712-9814. I have a meeting at 2, from 2 to 3.
Okay. Well, I'll talk to you sometime today. It depends on what time we finish here.
Okay, great.
All right. Because if we finish at 11, you'll have another meeting you have to go to, so...
Right.
All right. Jeff Wozniak.
Yes, I'm here.
Scott.
Here.
And Jones. Dina. Sarah. Tatiana's going to be late. Mike Suddy.
Yep.
Allison Noble. Sandra Mooney.
Yep, I'm here.
Kazoo.
Yes, I'm here.
Masaki.
Hi, I'm here.
Good, good. Anyone from the informatics or what used to be informatics? There's some change in personnel there. James Reynolds.
Yep, I'm here.
All right, Dan Savage. Bill Dunkey's going to be a little late. Dale?
We're both on, Ed.
Yep.
Hi.
Hi, everybody.
Okay, so we got a little San Diego contingent missing. Ken, Tina, Sarah, Mike Cassetti, Dan Savage. All right, well, they will join us shortly. None of them said they would not be on. All right, so a few announcements to make. First, I want to recognize Michael Charnas, who, as you all know, is the scientific director of CFAS. He was awarded the James H. Thorpe Award last month by the American Society of Addiction Medicine. I want to point out that that does come with a financial reward, and Michael was kind enough to donate that on behalf of himself to NOFAS, which I thought was a very nice and generous thing to do.
Yes, and Ed, if I could say, kind indeed. Michael, thank you so much.
Congratulations, Michael.
Congratulations.
Thank you,
Michael.
Thank you all.
Thank you, Michael.
All right. Bill, do you want to talk about the new RFA?
So I think Jill might have sent these around to everybody, and some of you, Michael, Tina, and Claire, were involved in the expert panel meetings to help come up with this initiative. Basically, are there two RFAs for the what's called the Healthy Brain and Child Development Study, or Healthy BCD. It is similar to the ABCD study, but at a much earlier time point. And so the NIH is interested in understanding normal brain development anywhere from prenatal stages up through the age of 10, which is where the ABCD study, the Adolescent Brain Cognitive Development Study, takes over. So this initiative would cover normal brain development, but it's also looking at the impact of pre- and postnatal exposures to opioids and other drugs. And alcohol is well represented for that other drug. The money that's funding this initiative is coming from money to fund the opioid health crisis. It's known as HEAL, the NIH HEAL initiative. So that's why the study's focus is on opioids, but with the help of many of the expert panelists, including Michael, Tina, and Claire, you know, it's known that poly drug substance abuse should be taken into account. So the two RFAs are actually to fund, they use the R34 mechanism, and they're funding planning grant so that it will give investigators time to plan for the study. And the study is going to be a large multi-site research study. And so the R34 applications would provide the investigators some time to plan for the initial development of this study. So that's the first phase of the study. And then the second phase of the study would actually be the study itself, which would fund multi-site research projects. There are two RFAs because one of the RFAs deals with single applications, and the other RFA deals with linked applications. If you come in as a group of investigators and those applications are linked, then you should apply for the second RFA. Basically that's it. If anyone has any questions, I'm happy to discuss it now or on the phone offline.
Could you just tell us what the title of that is again, please?
Sure. Let's see. So, John, the title, if you were to Google healthy face BCD, you should be able to find it.
Thank you.
Yep. And maybe Jill could, if you're having trouble, I can send that to you too. But their RFA number DA, because it's coming from NIDA, -19-029 and 19-036.
Okay, any other questions about that?
There's a lot of money behind it, if you haven't noticed. So it's going to be a very big initiative for many years to come.
Okay. I have some reminders about the Vancouver meeting. Remember that CFAS is having a meeting on Friday, March 8th. It's going to start at 3:30. I'm assuming or hoping that it will be over around 7:30. But I think people should probably plan on spending Friday night in Vancouver. It's about a 45 minute ride to the airport. You have to check in at least 2 hours ahead of time because you clear customs in Canada. And sometimes their security lines get a little long there. So it'd be really hard to try to get out that night unless you were going locally or flying a red eye. I would encourage everybody to do that. And I think on Saturday morning, one of Jen Thomas's students, Sarah Inkelis, is giving a morning plenary that day on sleep. And I believe that one of Joanne's students is also giving a talk that morning. So I think it would be worthwhile for everyone to stay and try to hear those, and it's always a good closing ceremony there. So I'll encourage you all to try to stay as late as you can on Saturday. Also, get your rooms because they are selling out at the low conference rate. It's at a nice hotel, and so I think it's a pretty enjoyable venue. You have to register for the conference, and individuals who are speaking need to submit their conference materials by January 31st, so that's coming up. That includes, I think you should have gotten emails about this. It's about your syllabus material, registering for the conference. I believe everyone's registration has been waived, who's speaking at least. There's conflict of interest forms that have to be submitted, and that's because of continuing education credit. They also want you to send in a few lines about yourself so the moderator has something to say. Your AV requirements, and this year they're using the 16x9, I think it is, PowerPoint presentations. And they also want to know whether you want would allow your presentation to be filmed. So there's a whole bunch of things that you need to go to the link in the email that was sent to you and go through those. So any questions about the Vancouver meeting? Great. Okay, so I guess we can start the main topic today, which is the continuation.
Ed, can I interrupt for a moment?
Yeah.
I wanted to plant a seed for those of you who are interested. there is going to be an ESBRA meeting in Lille, France, in late September, and we're looking into the possibility of organizing a CFAS symposium for that. If you're interested and have ideas about themes, please send me a note, and we'll get started on that. Thanks.
There will also be an APSAR meeting in Malaysia in November, so that's another possibility for a symposium. I don't know how many people in CFAS are members of APSAR, but that's the Asian Pacific. All right, so who's going to be up first? Scott and Yohan?
Hey everyone, it's Jill. I just want to let you know that WebEx did an update and it looks like it's not letting me do full presentation mode for the presentation, so I apologize, but here are the slides.
I just have a big H.
Me too.
Me too.
Me too.
It's Hannigan.
It's Hannigan. He's doing something. I don't know.
Hmm.
Hi, is there anything?
Hey, Jim.
Hi. Sorry I was a little bit late.
There we go. Okay, so I think I'm up first. Everyone knows what we've been doing. We're doing these baseline strain comparisons and then how they respond to alcohol. I've kind of already showed you that baseline strain comparison, and one of the surprising things is that we're seeing lots of changes in several cilia genes between the two strains. So this is without alcohol. So that was kind of interesting. We know that cilia are involved during a nerdylation stage alcohol exposure, and that's the subject of our new R01. But it's also showing up in this earlier gastrulation stage exposure, so that it kind of looks like cilia might be involved in several different aspects of alcohol's effects, which is interesting. And Johan will go into more detail about one of these genes, the DYNLT1, which he is making the knockouts in the fish. We have the knockouts to another cilia gene, EFCAB7, which we are just growing up now, and we expect that those mice that are lacking that gene will be more susceptible to alcohol. And then the next thing we did was, is to look at the immediate response to alcohol, and that data is sequenced, and we are analyzing it now, and it looks like that if you compare the 6J mice, which are the susceptible mice, to the 6N mice, which are the resistant mice, that the 6J have a lot more abnormal cell proliferation and apoptosis genes. So they're more primed to go through apoptosis in reaction to any sort of a stressor, which we think is kind of why they're more susceptible. Although interestingly, that the 6N mice, and we're not sure what this means yet, they have an altered cell migration pathways, and then cell migration and cell adhesion pathways. So we're not sure what the functional effect of that is. We're still exploring that. But if you look at the little cartoon I have here, it goes along with some of the genes that we've been finding. It goes along with very nicely with a lot of the stuff that Johan has shown previously, and it's still finding. And central to that is that a lot of this centers around the PI3 AKT mTOR pathway as well as the P53 pathway. And if you go to the next slide, Jill. And so what we did is we did our usual strategy of breeding heterozygote mice that are missing one copy of P53. And that produces litters that, of course, are wild types, hets, and full knockouts. And we get this very nice gene dose response effect, whereas when we knock out P53, we can completely block the effects of alcohol, kind of showing that it can be protective. And we expect that when we knock out various other pathways, or various other aspects of this pathway, we will similarly alter, either increase or decrease, the susceptibility to alcohol, which Leah and Tatiana can then look at in their human populations. So this is very brief. We're still doing more sequencing to further sort of look at what alcohol is doing. Jill, if you'll go back for just a second. If you look at, we're looking at the intermediate response to alcohol, so on the left there, that 12-hour time point is sort of the peak alcohol-induced apoptosis period. That's when we get the most apoptosis. And so we're really curious to see what will happen there. We are almost ready to sequence those. We had a couple of bad specimens that we need to recollect, but we're really excited to be doing those because that's, like I said, it's the peak period of apoptosis in response to alcohol. And so what the two embryos are doing differently will really tell us a lot about the mechanisms and the pathways that these two strains go down in response to alcohol. So I'm going to stop there and let Johan pick it up because he has a few more slides to show you guys. But I'm happy to take questions before Johan starts.
Scott, the enzyme that was X'd out on between NADH and NADPH was which?
That was nicotinamide nucleotide transhydrogenase. That is the only known gene that is mutated into 6Js versus the 6Ns, because both of their genomes have been sequenced. And so somewhere when these two strains diverged about 200 generations ago, the 6Js picked up that mutation. And that's presumably why they're more susceptible
than the Ns. Okay.
Right, and it's also why Jackson Labs has gone into their current strategy of regenerating the 6Js from old embryos every 5 years because obviously they were getting genetic drift and they wanted to put a stop to that. But it was beneficial to us because, you know, that NNT is important in things like glutathione homeostasis and reactive oxygen species balance.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Johan.
All right, so I thought I'd just show you kind of where we are with two of these genes. So we got from the baseline differences, our strategy was to generate CRISPR-induced mutations in those by injecting guide RNAs and Cas9. Raising those to adulthood. So we have those adults for all of the genes except one that didn't work. But so basically this, what you're seeing here, this is just what we do once we identify a carrier that seems to be, that seems to have a mutation based on a restriction fragment length polymorphism. Then we just go in and sequence this, and this is annotated. So this is that one ciliary gene that Scott told you about, and so the top is the sequence from the genome, and then the bottom is the sequence from our strain, wild type, which matches the genome, not surprisingly. And then you see in there where the guide RNA and the proto spacer adjacent motif is, and there's that little deletion, and that's exactly where you expect the deletion if Cas9 cut it. And so that's four base paired frame shift predicted. We haven't gone back and verified that through RNA sequencing, but that's what would be one of the next steps. So that's what the actual mutation looks like in this line of fish. And then if I get the next slide, we've started doing some phenotypic analyses, and I will preface this by saying that these fish are not genotyped. Our genotyping protocol has started failing us, and so we're still working on sorting this out. But basically what we've done is taken that that P0, the fish that was injected, it's now an adult, we'll cross it, and then exposed to alcohol, and so at most we'd have wild types and some heterozygous fish in here, no mutants. But we're seeing then if there's any haploinsufficiency for this gene. And so the top fish, that looks perfectly normal, and then you see the bottom two don't. The middle one is particularly interesting to us because there are other ciliary mutants in zebrafish that have been characterized, and they have this body axis defect. So we think, so we still need to get the genotyping, obviously, but we're hopeful that we're actually seeing some haploinsufficiency in the presence of ethanol. And so then the next slide is just a second example. It's this gene that Scott told you is actually mutated in the sensitive strain, and it's a real big comparison. We have sequences from a lot of different individuals in there, but you scroll down, you can see at 16, there's again a four base pair deletion in this line. We did the same thing with these fish, testing the F1s for anything that looked like haploinsufficiency, and that's in the next slide. Again, the fish aren't genotyped, but we have, something that looks perfectly normal at top, and then on bottom we have some strange defects in the what would appear to be vasculogenesis. If you look under the tail, right, where there's that big red blob, that's where zebrafish initially produces its vascular system, and so that seems disrupted, and obviously there's a lot of edema in there and small eyes. So, again, possible haploinsufficiency with this mutant as well. These two I'm showing you are the most far along. We actually now have adult F1s for each of these lines that once we get our genotyping going again, we'll be able to take a full look at the range of mutants, heterozygotes, and wild types. And so that was just a flavor of what we're doing. I take any questions.
Johan, are you seeing any defects in the cartilages of the face?
Yeah, so we didn't pluck them out for these photos here, but there's definitely defects happening in the face. It's a lot smaller in these fish, and in the other ones, that bottom fish also had a lot smaller cartilages in the face. So the other problem we had recently was that our real fancy microscope, the condenser, broke, and so we weren't able to get the high magnification photos that we would normally have to show that.
And where is this gene expressed? Is it ubiquitous?
We do not have expression data on these genes right now, so I don't know. I guess that would be something that we probably need to, if we're seeing something here, need to start thinking about doing.
I believe that NNT is pretty ubiquitous. Simply because it's involved in converting NADP to NADPH. So it's a mitochondrial-associated protein. So I think it's fairly ubiquitous.
All righty. Any other questions?
I have one more thing to add that I forgot. That other ciliary protein that we were talking about, EFCAB7, there are, if you PubMed that gene, there are only three publications for that gene, and two of them are human and one is cell culture. And so we actually have the mice. We are, as far as we know, the first to have that mice, and so we're kind of excited because that means that we'll be able to help characterize what this ciliary protein actually does during development. The mouse knockout project didn't even knock it out until we requested them to do so, and they got it to us pretty quickly. So we're kind of excited to see what this protein does during normal development. Okay, that's all.
We're going to have to move on, and I would encourage everybody to stay on. Isn't there like a five-minute limit so that we can finish this today? Okay, so Christy?
Yep, can you hear me?
Yep.
All right, I'm ready. I'm going to move fast. So next slide. So just as a template, These are the five main components of the app that I'm going to talk about. We have the learning modules, which is the core content. We have the family forum, which is where families can communicate with each other. And then there's a library with some additional resources. The notebook is the personalization section where people can save things in the app. And then there's a dashboard. So next slide. So in the learning modules, we have those all programmed into Android, and Cristiano is working on getting those into iOS within Apple. We've done a full third round of content edits to optimize for the phone interface. We've completed and reviewed over 55 hours of filming. As of last month, it was 85% of rough cuts were sequenced. We've gotten a bit further than that. We're almost all done with those. We have a voiceover artist selected, and we're in the process of designing characters and animation that will provide some of the motivational interviewing and engagement features within the app. The family forum was mostly completed in year one. Right, next. The library, we have about 50% of the optional content written. We're continuing, we've got it all outlined and assigned. Some will also continue to grow during the course of the project. The notebook and dashboard, the functionalities have been decided and involve mostly linkages with other components. Cristiano has the design of those already in the phone. It's just a matter of programming them together. Cristiano, do you want to talk about the app-wide progress?
Oh, yeah. So one thing that we did compared to last year, we transitioned completely from what we were using before, which was based on Google Cloud Platform. It was mostly done because it was cheap and easy to implement. Now we moved everything to Amazon Web Services so that we have a better integration with all the different services that we need, and also it supports a full app compliance for the data that we're going to be getting through the app. We've been doing a lot of tweaking and interaction and different type of testing in order to change a little bit the user interface and some of the functionality that we're going to be offering through the app. And then with a manuscript plan where we actually want to show how the entire design process and development process took place since the initial beginning of the conception of the app itself to what we're delivering now.
All right. I think we have another slide,
yeah.
Perhaps. In the evaluation, this year we completed 7 focus groups in 5 U.S. cities. Thanks for everyone who helped us with those. All of those interviews have been transcribed verbatim and line-by-line coded. The analysis is just about complete, and I'm going to be starting to write the manuscript in the next couple of weeks, and those results are going to be presented in the upcoming symposia.
Any questions?
Did we have any other? Nope. And at the end of February, we'll have the prototype complete, and we will be showing the prototype in the symposia at the Vancouver conference, and we'll then shortly start beta testing with users.
Yeah.
Good. Any other questions? Okay. Joanne?
Okay.
5 minutes.
Okay. So we have 2 aims in our UO1. The first aim is to, building on our developmental project, use validation cohorts to confirm the utility of immune parameters as possible biomarkers and or predictors, hold on, Jill, of alcohol-related health and neurobehavioral outcomes. So the progress is as follows. This is the aim where we simply are able to leverage all of the other projects ongoing in CFAST. So the first is with Tina Chambers, where we used her Ukraine cohorts for our developmental project. We're extending that collaboration to her new Ukraine cohort. And here we'll have matched mother-infant pairs. So previously we had blood from the moms, we had blood from the infants. They were all from the same cohort, but they were not matched. So the power of having matched pairs is really important to look at the influence of the maternal immune changes on the infant. Recruitment of Tina's new cohort is ongoing. Blood samples have been collected from 50 pregnant women. They're starting to deliver now. So we're hopeful that by the end of the year, we'll have samples from them. Next, the second set of studies is with Ken and Tina and with help from Sarah for our control recruitment. And here, this is Ken's San Diego registry, where they are bringing back children that they saw early on. They will bring them back and test them again. These are children now 5 to 17 years of age. From children born in San Diego County, they also have a mid-gestation blood sample from the mother, blood spots from the child at birth, and now with bringing them back for a dysmorphology exam, a health survey, and a blood sample for us to use to look at cytokines and other inflammation markers. So again, this is very powerful. We'll have a maternal sample, a child sample at birth, and then a second child sample later on. And sample collection has begun and is underway, and there are lots of subjects registered already. So again, this is moving forward really well. Thank you, Ken and Tina. And finally, with Jeff Wozniak. Wait. Thank you. And this is Jeff's, not his CFAS project, but his new choline clinical trial, which is moving along very well. He has already collected 44 samples across 27 unique individuals. These are children 2 to 5 years of age, all with FASD, who will receive choline or not in this clinical trial, and we'll have blood samples pre and post from these children as well. So again, a unique sample looking at whether or not choline has any effects on inflammatory markers, and also we can relate it to the other demographic and health information that Jeff has on these children. So that's aim one, and we're excited about this, and we think, again, by the end of the year, we should have samples from all three of these components. Aim two, next slide, is to extend this assessment of the immune system into adulthood. We're looking at adults beginning at age 22 and up as old as they register, 50 plus. We have one person now in their 60s who just approached us to be part of the study. These are being recruited in British Columbia, and we're in close collaboration with the UL1 with Claire's UL1 and her study in Atlanta, which also includes Therese Grant and her cohort in Seattle. So recruitment and testing are now ongoing in all of these sites. We have regular conference calls. Both Therese and Claire have sent a small shipment of blood just to be sure that the blood arrives here frozen and in good shape, and that's gone perfectly. Our recruitment has expanded now. Our research assistant, Amanda, has developed a Facebook page to help us in recruiting, and we've linked that to other Facebook pages of in the FASD field. Like Claire, as she mentioned in her presentation, we're going to reach out to the justice system, and Tammy, who's a co-investigator, has located a transition house for offenders on conditional release or those who are homeless, meaning to be a supportive environment for individuals, adults. And we're hoping to reach out to them and connect with their population. Tammy is also connected with the Longhouse at UBC. This is a First Nations Longhouse, which is a community center and support services for First Nations individuals at UBC, as well as reaching out to the Métis community. And from those two, all of those, we hope to get both individuals who are affected by alcohol as well as recruit controls. And for us, we're really trying to be able to recruit controls from within the same community, to try to avoid some of the issues with having totally different ethnic or racial or genetic groups as part of it. That's inevitable to some extent, but hopefully we can make a good recruitment of adults from within the same communities as our subject. And we'll be recruiting again at the 2019 conference, sharing a table in the exhibit area with Tatiana and Leah, recruiting for their study. So with all of those, we hope to ramp up our recruitment. Things slowed a little bit in December, as you might expect, but we now have new people signed up, and we hope to ramp up even more over the next month or two. So that's it. The last slide just shows graphically our progress. Last slide. And that's it. So that's our progress to date. We're sending things, data to the registry and 2D photos to Mike, and that's where we are.
Alrighty. Any questions? Quickly? Okay. Jeff?
Jill, are you able to get the one that I just emailed to you a little while ago, or if it's too difficult, don't worry about it.
Jill can do anything.
There it is. Okay, I can provide a brief update on what's happening on the neuroimaging project, and as Jill is bringing that up, we are heavily involved in recruitment at this point, and it looks like she's got it up now. The totals that we have currently are 56 enrolled and completed the first MRI scan. So these are people coming in for an MRI and a cognitive evaluation. 56 is our goal for May 31st is 60, so we're at 93% of that goal, which is really well on track. And it's 62% of the overall final target, so we're anticipating that we're not going to have any trouble with the overall recruitment. You can see that with the figure there that we're pretty well balanced in terms of alcohol-exposed kids and controls. And this is a longitudinal study, so we are doing a 15-month interval between scans. So we're almost at the point, starting in March, we will be starting our first rescans of individuals coming back at 15 months. Next slide, Jill, please. One of the things we're working on, we've hired a new a new person to work on data analysis. One of the things we're trying to get working right now is our myelin mapping. These are just examples to show you using a fairly simple imaging a sequence. This is a T2-weighted sequence. You can extract myelin maps and then compare them with, at a voxel-wise level, at a ROI-wise level, or across the whole brain. So, and you can look at cortical myelin, you can look at subcortical myelin. It doesn't matter wherever you want to look. So that's something we're trying to do right now. We are going through and basically taking all the scans and putting them in a compartmentalized fashion and then shuttling them off to the supercomputer to run these kinds of procedures. So we have a new person working on that. Next slide, please, Jill. And as Joanne mentioned, we have a lot of interactions on this project, so we are collecting her blood, and we'll be sending that off to her sometime toward the beginning of this year. We're still collecting scans, facial scans, with the handheld camera for Mike, and I think we probably have more than that now. We probably have about 76 or close to 80. Dr. Jones has been here once. The plan will be for him to come again this year in 2019 and see anyone that we have who has not seen him yet. And I'm collaborating closely with Sarah on the TREE project. So all of the people that come for neuroimaging are also getting the validation battery, which is a complete neuropsych battery, includes IQ and attention and memory and other things. So we are both going to be using that data for each of our own purposes. And most of that data has already been uploaded to her TREE app so that she's able to start working with that data simultaneously. That's it. So the plans for the coming months are just to continue the recruitment and to start on the rescans and to get all of our processing lined up.
Sounds good. Any questions there? And that camera's a lot easier to use and better?
Camera is fantastic.
All right. Glad to hear. Okay. Sandra?
All right, so on behalf of Tom, who can't be here again today, with his apologies, just a reminder that we're working with rats who are being exposed to ethanol in the prenatal period, and the project was designed to look at both the microbiome and then to profile some cytokines. So in the moms, they were going to come into the facility and be on the altered diet for the alcohol and drinking water prior to mating, and then through that, stool samples have been collected every 2 weeks for microbiome analysis. We will not be analyzing every 2 weeks because that's going to just be a little over the top and out of our price range. But they're also, blood is collected after the litter's been weaned during the euthanization process there, and that will be used for cytokine profiling. In the offspring, stools collected at weaning to test whether their microbiome is the same as the mom's, and then a month later, around postnatal day 50, to see if they maintain any altered microbiome or if that changes. Again, when the animals are euthanized, they're collecting spleen, blood, intestine, and whole brain, cytokine profiling again, and then the intestinal tissue will be analyzed for the histology and specific cell types. We're banking the brains for a later analysis. If the next slide, Jill, just shows where we're at in terms of numbers. You see we ran into a hiccup with our control animals on the liquid diet. Dan Savage, I think you warned us that this was likely to happen, and once again, you are right. So there's a hiccup there. We have, however, been able to get some litters from the ethanol-exposed animals there, and then we've done a little better with those that are getting the alcohol in the water. Again, actually using Dan's model of the four-hour exposure. So in the interest of actually having data, what Tom is thinking is to go ahead and begin the analysis for when we get that water exposed group up to four, to go ahead and get some analysis moving along so that we actually have something. He's decided, instead of just looking at a couple of the cytokines, that he's going to do a rat cytokine array. Joanne, if you want to see what's in that, I'm happy to share that with you before he makes the final decision.
Why don't we talk offline? That would be great.
Yeah. So that's going to analyze 27 cytokines, and hopefully there's some overlap with what you guys are doing. And so that's kind of where the project stands right now.
Sandra, this is Dan. A couple of technical questions. So, and make sure I'm mm-hmm. clear. Are you switching over to the voluntary drinking paradigm for which would reduce your number of groups overall, and or are you still going to pursuing the liquid diet? I wasn't clear what you said there.
So the liquid diet, they've got some animals that were given alcohol, so that mm-hmm. some of those worked. It was the control animals that failed to get pregnant, and it's, you know, because I'm not actually there anymore, and I'm not 100% sure. I don't know when they started mating with those animals or anything. So they're trying that again with a new cohort, which sort of raises some issues that may get us around some others. The initial analysis, I think, would be on the ones with the alcohol in the water, just because we have a lot more samples there.
Okay. And just for two reminders.
Okay. Have to be quick, right?
All right, Ed. How long are you exposing them or having the moms drink before you get them pregnant?
So at this point, these animals have been sitting in the facility quite a lot. The ones on liquid diet have been getting it 4 days a week, and the ones with the water have been getting it 5 days a week, and it's been quite a few months at this point.
Months, okay.
Yeah.
And the way that you're storing the brain, is it fresh frozen or fixed or other parts?
I don't know that. My guess okay. is because they're collecting blood and various other things that it's
okay.
going to be fresh yeah. frozen.
All right, well, we can find that out later on. We want to keep things
yeah.
moving here. Thanks.
Okay, the Tories.
Yes. So the our goal is to define the RNA biomarkers for the cognitive problem in FSD. So in AIM-1, we use the FSD mouse model that we have been using. And all of the wet part, which includes the behavior test and RNA-seq, have been completed. which consists of like a 120 sequencing in total. And now we are working on to find out the best machine learning system to judge the behavior problems from the biomarker that we defined. The first one is the random forest, which was actually used by Rajesh and Tina's group in their mRNA paper. And another is the new strategy, deep learning with the Keras on TensorFlow. And we are currently having the trouble for the overfitting of the model, but we hope we can solve it soon. And hopefully in Vancouver, we have a full picture of this mouse part. And M2 is a human story. So the blood came from actually from Tina's cohort, and we finally got the first blood in December, and we successfully obtained the T cell B cell monocytes separated by FACS sorting. On top of that, we also stored the plasma and the cells for potential genome studies for somebody or us. So that's it. Thank you.
Okay, any questions on this? Okay, well, I think everybody's moving along quite well. We have a few more things. Is Tatiana on?
Yep, Lee and I are both here.
Okie doke. You wanted to talk about an update on the data deposit and
yep.
the dictionary.
Yep. So I'm going to have Leah do most of it because she's the one who's led the work. So go ahead, Leah, and I'm right here to support you. Go ahead.
So you can go to the second page, Jill. Thank you. There's an IT guy here.
Hello.
I call, and he can't answer any questions. He's the one doing all the hard work.
You're cutting out, Leah.
Oh, all right. So, sorry, we're on a cell phone as we're trying to do this in a room with poor signal. So what Leah's just saying is we've got Zachman who is on the call, and he's the person who's been doing the IT in the back. Can you hear us okay?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm louder than she is. Okay, I have children. All right, so if you just look at the chart, what we've done, if you remember the timeline, is everybody was asked to first upload a data dictionary so we knew what data to be expecting. Everybody did that, did a great job with that. Then we asked everyone to give us a file. It didn't have to be a full data file, but a file that would have initial data that we could review. And what you can then see is when it goes to IU feedback, we are now going back to sites and saying, okay, well, you know, you said your data dictionary was going to be in this format, but it's actually come back in this format. So now we're working with everybody to get them their feedback so they can put their file in the same format as their data dictionary or their data dictionary in the same format as the file. We don't really care. They just need to match. And so we certainly anticipate that everyone is doing this in an automated fashion. Once we get this worked out once, it should be pretty trivial to be able to keep moving then with regular updates, getting updated data. You can see a lot of people back there in the process of sending a new file, and then developers will now match, and that will then be our first data transfer. I think Leah and Jack have done a great job. They've reached out to sites, offered to do calls, you know, really tried to make it clear, because sometimes you think it looks like it's in the right format, but then in practice it isn't. So I'd like to just see if people on the call are still confused or anything. I think we know if you are or you aren't, but if there's anyone who hasn't conveyed that, we certainly want to make sure that we clarify that because we really want the first data transfer to go smooth for them to start everything else. And that's kind of where it is. The chart sort of says it all.
Sounds like, for the most part, everything's moving forward, so that's good.
Great.
Jill, progress tracking?
Yeah, so progress tracking, that's not the slide that's up now, but the documents were all, I got updates from every project, so thank you everyone, and everyone can view that in the Google Drive, the shared Google Drive Excel document. But another thing that I just wanted to talk about briefly was for the Vancouver meeting by February 24th, each project will just go through and go into the ERA Commons progress report like you're doing it for the April 1st deadline. You'll enter in your information just like you normally would. But you don't need to enter in the budget information, but you can just email me by clicking the view, the PDF of where it is up to that point. And I'll email out more specific instructions about that after this call.
So this is for the progress report that's due prior to the Vancouver meeting?
Correct.
That it can be reviewed by the SAB and NIAAA. And since your NIH progress reports are going to be due the following month, we figured we'd just keep it in the same format as the NIH protocol, and that way it'll save you guys some time and work. So,
thank you.
All right. So that's anything. Did you want to say about the Google Drive docs?
Let's see. Can you guys see them this small? I mean, everyone did their updates. They're all here. You can click through the tabs to see all of the progress.
That's on old Google Drive if anyone wants to.
Yep. Okay. And I did have one other quick thing, but does anyone else have any comments first? From the SAB or NIAAA?
Nope, not me.
Bill continues to do a great job on putting all this together and with skills that I've never even imagined.
Well, I wanted to talk to you guys all about one of my favorite years, 1949.
Stop right now.
Nope.
Hey, I've got other things to do.
Many interesting things happened in 1949. Truman's Fair Deal Program was unveiled. The NATO Treaty was signed. The Soviets tested the atomic bomb. The People's Republic of China was recognized. And Winston Churchill shared his support of the European Union. Some of these key pieces are still in the headlines today. And the world is still fascinated by the same events, like watching world leaders sign things. And the World Series. Other new things continue to expand and grow in their popularity now, like the NBA. Some timeless and some would say timely art was produced in 1949, including Arthur Miller's play Death of a Salesman and George Orwell's novel 1984. The same categories of exciting products are still being announced, like new cameras, cars, TVs, technologies, and music formats. And some of those new 45s had some snappy tunes like the number ones I've listed here. While this is all fun to look at and fun to remember, I want to specifically point out something extraordinary that happened in January of 1949. A massive snowstorm hit Southern California area, big and bold enough to even add some challenges to people's treasured golf games. And a while later in January was the historic birth of something else in America on a particularly important date.
I pay her for this stuff.
And that date was January 25th and the debut of the time-honored Emmy Awards. I did this all on my break over the weekend, sir. Many remarkable awards were given, but I believe one was accidentally omitted, so I'd like to honor it now. And the winner of Outstanding Lead in a featured NIAAA Consortium Award goes to our own Edward P. Riley, who was also born on that historic day, January 25th, 1949, on the other coast of America, and who turned 70 this Friday. Happy birthday, Ed. I want to thank you all for your attention, and please note that for the rest of the day, this will be my view for making this presentation. I will now deliver this award and some fan mail that came in from across the country. Happy birthday, Ed.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Happy birthday. Holy smokes, I really did get stuff. Thank you all. All right, I know that some of you have to go off to other meetings.
Wait, look at your award.
I got an award. Wow. Thank you very much.
Is it a major award?
No, it's a wine cup.
Traveler.
Travel wine cup. So
it's appropriate.
You can drink and drive.
I can. Wow. I just have to move to Louisiana.
Get pregnant.
That goes on. Oh, God. All right, so now...
Ed, are you related to the Unabomber?
I'm pretty normal. It's in my early days.
Ed, those beards are back in these days.
But hopefully mine's just staying off. It's just easy. So, yeah, there's only one picture of me without a beard there, isn't there? Two. One with a mustache. And
someone doesn't like their picture being taken anymore.
I hate having my picture taken. So, well, all right. So I got another thing I want to congratulate Julie Cable, Claire Coles, who had a paper come out in developmental neuropsychology with their near-infrared spectroscopy work. So I think
thank you.
Congratulated for that. I will, Claire, I'll call you after what, noon, my time, 3 your time?
Yeah.
Okay. And Mike Setti, I know you're on, I think. And Gans will be in Vancouver on all day Friday and Saturday morning. Okay? So I hope you two can get together and talk about some stuff. All right?
Perfect. Yep, perfect.
And also, for the shading of your morph, I can take care of that if that speeds the process up. All right? Just let me know. All right. That's it. We're just about out of time. I think some people joined on. So, Tina?
I'm here.
Tina's on. Ken? Tatiana was there. Mike was there. And everybody else I think I got. So, just Sarah had to go to the emergency room with her husband. So, that's why. And I just got handed a whole bunch of cards, and I want to thank you all for doing this. I am presumably going away on my birthday, although they will not tell me where. So I won't be around on Saturday, I guess, is when it's going to happen. So I will.
Well, enjoy.
Have fun.
I will certainly enjoy. I have no idea what it is. I just was told that a limo will pick me up at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, well, you only go. I turned down a trip to Cambodia, so something just. All righty. Well, thank you all, and have a great rest of the week, and I will be in touch. Claire, I'll call you later, all right?
Okay, call at 3:30.
Okay, no problem. Thank you very, very much, everybody. Have a good
happy
one.
Happy birthday, Ed.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Ed. Take care. Happy birthday, Ed.
Thanks.
Bye. Okay.